Welcome to Getting Legal With It, a podcast for Colorado young lawyers by Colorado young lawyers. I'm your host, Kevin Chaney. For those listening to us for the first time, I'm a personal injury and criminal defense lawyer here in Colorado. I graduated from the University of Colorado Law School in 2014 and founded my practice, Chaney, Galuzzi & Howard, LLC, a short time later. I'm a member of the Colorado Trial Lawyers Association, where I sit on its New Lawyers Division and also serve on the executive and legislative committees. I'm also a member of the Colorado Criminal Defense Bar Association. And finally, I serve on the Colorado Bar Association's Board of Governors, the CBA Executive Committee, and the CBA Young Lawyers Division Executive Council. If you're interested in learning more about any of these wonderful organizations, please feel free to shoot me an email at kevin@cghlawfirm.com. This podcast is created and sponsored by the Colorado Bar Association's Young Lawyers Division. Our goal with this podcast is to bring you bi-weekly episodes with information that is both fun and informative for young lawyers. We have some awesome guests lined up, and we are just getting started. If you like our podcast, please, please, please leave us a review and tell your colleagues. And with that, let's jump right in. My guest today is my friend and colleague, Nick Troxell, owner of the law firm Troxell Fitch. Nick, how are you doing today?
Good, man. How are you doing?
You know, I'm surviving here in the time of Corona, which, you know, something to be said for that, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were kind of just commenting on that fact that it feels good to still be surviving through this first pandemic of our lives.
Absolutely. Hopefully the first and last.
Right. Hopefully. Hopefully.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? Where are you from?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm originally from Lincoln, Nebraska. Go Big Red.
What brought you to Colorado?
Yeah. So I actually, when I was looking at going to law school, I was pretty dead set on moving to Los Angeles. Not really sure how I got that picture in my head. Being from Lincoln, Nebraska, I probably would have hated it looking back. At the last minute, I actually applied to CU Law because I had some buddies out here. And, you know, my dad kind of convinced me, hey, let's do our due diligence and at least check everything out. And I kind of laugh. The first time I pulled over the hill going into Boulder, it was like, well, I think my mind has changed. I'll be coming here. So yeah. That's how I ended up out here.
Yeah, you go over that hill, and I love that drive going up 36. And you just come over that little crest there, and you're like, yeah, this will do.
Especially because it was one of those perfect Colorado days, 70 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. The sun was shining on the flat irons, and it was like, man, it's like guiding me to my new home.
You know, it's interesting when you were telling your story. I don't know what it is about California and growing up in kind of rural America, but I grew up in Casper, Wyoming, and I had a dream since I was like six that I was going to live in San Francisco. And I'd only been there one time. And I was like 6 or 7 years old, and we were there for like 2 days. And with no other information, I just had always dreamed, like, that's where I'm going to go to law school. That's where I'm going to live. And then, you know, life kind of throws you some curveballs, and you end up in Colorado. But it is. I don't know. There's just something mythical almost about California when you live right in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Well, for me, I had gone to L.A. that one time, and I remember we were driving past the Ferrari dealerships in Beverly Hills. And I like went in and took pictures with the cars, and it was like, well, this seems like the place to be.
Yeah, you know, you move to LA, you get a Ferrari, you know, that's how it works, right?
Right, it's your price of admission.
Well, so we know that you went to law school like I did up at CU Boulder. What kind of attracted you to the profession of law? Did you always know you wanted to be a lawyer, or tell us a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, so it was a little bit atypical where I played football through my freshman year of college and after some injuries just needed to do something else. And so at that point, I've always just been somebody who works best with lofty goals. And so at that point, I actually sat down and I said, what's the number one law school in the country? I saw it was Yale. And that day I was just said, hey, I'm going to Yale Law School, kind of knowing full and well that I wouldn't actually get into Yale because people don't just decide to go to Yale Law School one day. I mean, at least to my knowledge. But at that point, I knew that if I worked hard towards that goal, that I would at least get somewhere good in life. So throughout the undergrad process, as I started to do well, I should circle back a little bit. So I knew that was the goal I wanted to reach at that point. But I always kind of knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And kind of my plan was, hey, now that I'm not playing sports, I'm going to focus on getting a degree in some type of business. Then I'll get a law degree and kind of focus on business, and then I'll open some type of business.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, you know, you say atypical, and I do think there is this kind of myth out there that most people, you know, go to college, know they want to go to law school, you know, get a degree in like political science and, you know, go to law school. But it's interesting. I ask, you know, almost every guest that we've had on this podcast, and very few of them had that like kind of straight line. You know, some of them went and worked for a while. We had someone who wanted to be an FBI agent. There were all of these different career paths. And then, you know, it's interesting just kind of hearing each person's journey to law school.
Yeah.
And so before we jump into kind of our main topics today, what are some of your hobbies outside of the law?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a huge snowboarder. Actually, that was one of the biggest factors outside of kind of the general vision when starting a firm. Both my law partner Josh and I are huge, you know, snowboarding nuts, and so we have always kind of, you know, amongst the other benefits of owning your own firm and kind of being the captain of your own ship, we kind of always looked at it like, hey, look, you know, it's not going to always be powder days on Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, hey, if you got a Tuesday powder day, you don't have any meetings, we want to be able to take those. So big snowboarder, pretty much anything outdoors. During the summer, it's harder to pinpoint kind of one activity because I feel like there are so many fun ones.
Right.
Some biking, some climbing, some like camping, some, you know, I actually haven't been whitewater rafting, but it looks fun.
It does. It is fun. It is very fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I just love kind of all the kind of opportunities that you can do things outside in Colorado. So try to just take advantage of that as much as possible. Also, big gym guy, really just kind of need to have that kind of to keep my mind sharp and everything like that. You know, other than that, though, typical stuff, you know, grilling, drinking beers with your buddies, all the kind of typical, you know, fun stuff.
That's that Colorado lifestyle right
Absolutely.
There. Absolutely. turning back to kind of your professional life, as we mentioned, you are one of the two founding partners of the law firm Troxell Fitch. What practice area do you guys focus on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say about 80 to 85% of our practice is focused on business transactions. So that is formations, commercial contract drafting and review, financings, either debt or equity, and then, you know, mergers and acquisitions. Then about 15 to 20% of our practice focuses on real estate transactions. So leases, you know, buying and selling real estate. And we've also gained some expertise in, you know, a slight specialty in condominium formations.
And I think we're going to come back in just a second to, you know, a little bit more about your practice area. First, I'd like to focus on when did you decide, and I know you've mentioned earlier that you've kind of always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and, you know, you went to law school after getting a business degree with kind of that in mind. When did you decide that you wanted to open up your own firm?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of credit for that actually has to go to my law partner, Josh, but it was kind of a long road. So when I came to law school, I was pretty set on being an entrepreneur, but actually my initial plan was, hey, I'm going to, you know, cause I got my undergrad in accounting. So I was pretty good at the kind of tax side of thing. And I noticed that a lot of people weren't. It was a kind of a complex area. And so what my plan was, hey, I'm going to get, you know, some type of tax specialty in law school. I'm going to, you know, work for a big firm, being kind of a tax specialist for, you know, 5 years or so, try to get some money together and then, you know, have the money to be able to just start trying different things. Throughout law school, I strayed away from the kind of tax specialty just because I quickly realized that I didn't want to be the guy just kind of sitting in the back room cranking hours on specific tax provisions. I wanted to be more involved with the overall, you know, client interactions and kind of also it kind of shifted towards just more of the general business transactions where I wanted to be involved the whole time and have some tax knowledge to be able to kind of sprinkle in there. So for a while, I actually thought that I would satisfy my entrepreneurial itch by working for a big firm and working for startups. And so, you know, kind of throughout law school, that was initially my goal. Ended up, so, you know, was going to go work for a firm called Cooley in Broomfield, great firm, interviewed there the day after graduation, ended up not getting the gig. And so, you know, no big deal, but it kind of was the first time that I stepped outside of that tunnel vision, that bubble that I had had where it was like, hey, this is the goal that I'm shooting towards. And as you know, I mean, once you kind of, the moment you step out of law school after graduation, you kind of see the world from a different perspective than when you were in that bubble. So then I started to assess more so, you know, what I wanted out of my life generally, not just, hey, you know, try to set that really lofty goal and do well in law school and get a big firm job. So what I kind of started looking at was, okay, you know, what's that end goal look like? I love the, you know, one of my mentors would tell me, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So when you're in a moment of not knowing kind of the next step to take, you really need to envision what you're working towards, and it can make it so much clearer knowing, hey, that's where I need to get. So when I thought about that, I thought back to, hey, you know, I got into this to be an entrepreneur. I got into this to kind of be the captain of my own ship. I knew I wanted a family and hobbies and to be able to travel and hit powder days and, you know, go to concerts, do fun things, have my law practice be a big piece of my life, but not my entire life. And so that was what really kind of, you know, so kind of circling back to how I owe a lot of, credit to Josh, and that is that he actually decided he wanted to take the plunge first and kind of wore me down over time. I'm a little bit more risk averse and things like that, you know, than he was. He was ready to dive off the cliff, and took him about 3-4 months during bar prep. And then in the months after, where I was still like, well, maybe I will go work for a different big firm or something like that. But eventually we all decided that that was the route to go. And once we decided, there was no turning back.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I like to, that I notice, you know, having shot several episodes at this point are kind of themes that everyone hits on. And one of those themes that I think almost all of our guests have kind of hit on is that life is rarely a straight path. You rarely do you get to exactly the place where you thought that you would be, and that you have to be prepared to have doors open and close at kind of different points in your life. That, you know, and like you said, you thought you were going to work for a specific firm. That was, you know, where you thought you were going. And then, you know, you didn't get the job. Life threw you a curveball. And now you've ended up in a place where, you know, you're happy and you've got this great practice. And it really is just being open to opportunity and not necessarily thinking that there's only one path to success. And I love that quote that you just dropped. I'm going to have to use that, that, you know, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Because I think that that is so important. And I think so much of the stress that law students and young lawyers put on themselves as they think they need to know exactly each step that's going to happen. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and that's going to get me here, and I need to check this box. And so much of it is just being open to different experiences and seeing right where those opportunities are.
Right. Absolutely.
So you and Josh decided to, you know, open this firm. You know, we've had some other guests who have owned their own firm kind of talk about some more higher level stuff. So I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about more of the details. What were some of the first things that you guys did as to after you decided, hey, we're going to open? What were some of the initial steps that you guys took to actually make that happen?
Yeah. So the first thing we did, I mean, we didn't really need to do this, but because both Josh and I are you know, so, you know, we really are family oriented. We're kind of friend and family, like community oriented people. We wanted to make sure it was kind of funny. The day after we got sworn in, we had a big dinner with everybody who was in town, and we announced that we were having the firm to everyone and kind of got that blessing. So I know that's not quite what you were looking for as a first step, but that was something that we really needed to, you know, have everybody who's kind of in our corner know. And it was a really great, you know, launch. So the second thing we did was figure out how we were going to actually structure the firm from a legal perspective. So we spent some, you know, a couple of days looking into that from our own perspective. And then we decided to, we set up as an LLC owned by two S Corps to have some tax advantages and things like that. So it's kind of cool utilizing, you know, our own legal expertise to set up our own business first. You know, hopefully we never have to test the validity of those documents from back then. But
you had that advantage when, you know, doing small business law, that you understand how to create a legal entity and things
right,
like that.
Right.
That was something my partner and I were frantically Googling as we were trying to read about all of the different choices that you have to make.
Yeah, actually, that's funny you say that, because I remember one of the first times we talked at Law Bank, we were writing blogs, and you made a mention of that, and literally the first blog I wrote was, what type of entity should I use for my new business? That's what I named it, because you were like, well, that's what I Googled when I started my firm. So I was like, well, hey, we want to, you know, SEO.
Well, see, there you go. You can get ideas for blogs anywhere. You right. know, just have a conversation. Next thing you know, you're writing a blog. Tell us a little bit about kind of that first year. So, you know, I've spoken with many people that are interested or did open up their own firm. And that first year is the scariest, in many ways, the most exciting, but it can be very nerve-wracking. And, you know, there's a lot of times where you're thinking, am I going to make it? Am I not going to make it? Like, what am I doing here? How was that first year for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, so for us, it was kind of, you know, kind of like you, where we came right out of law school. So we had no clients, no real savings, no, you know, we were pretty much bootstrapping it from day one. So what we would do to supplement some of that, we actually drove some Lyft as well to kind of just get the instant cash flow. But from a legal perspective, we made a commitment from day one that we were actually going to each. So we started November 3rd, 2017. That first month, I mean, was kind of figuring out which way is up and down. We didn't do much. That December, we started, you know, doing some networking, but with it being the holidays as well, didn't get a ton done. So we really kind of, I count, you know, January 1, 2018, where we really started pounding the pavement. And we made a commitment to each other that first year that we would each do 150 networking events in the year. So 300 total for the firm. So that it came out to about 3 a week. So that's kind of how we approached it, was really just, I mean, pounding the pavement anywhere and everywhere that business owners, entrepreneurs, anybody, you know, anything, even small business, entrepreneurial related. I mean, we were shaking hands, kissing babies. It was, you know, you can't do that these days with, you know, without a mask on,
but, right.
You know, it was really a testament to just what willpower can get you, I say, because there wasn't, you know, in small business law, you don't really have the, you know, you can't go, you know, get the contracts with the courts for kind of the lower income, you know, services, or there's kind of just less out there where, you know, it was a lot of just kind of pounding the pavement. And at first, so, you know, as you kind of know, when you start a firm, you got to be take anything you can get to some extent. That was the best lesson Lyft taught us, was that you could go drive for 7 hours and make $110, or you could go find 1 hour of legal work and make more than that. So what we started realizing quickly was, hey, let's get this, you know, let's do this Lyft if we need cash, but as much as possible, be just pounding the pavement anywhere and everywhere. So, we always marketed for what we wanted, business and real estate transactions. Initially, though, we did a lot of consumer debtor defense work. So we actually found a couple legal insurance plans. So these are things where people either pay for or they get them through work. And they're always looking for attorneys to sign up, because you basically do simple services at a pretty low fixed fee.
Like prepaid legal type things?
Right, right. Yeah. So we did a fair amount of consumer debtor defense, you know, some title review, really just all over the board in terms of the different stuff we did. But we probably did that. So that was the first year. So we probably started phasing out doing a lot of that other kind of work about, you know, probably towards the end of that first year, I'll be honest. It was probably close to it was probably most of the year that we were still taking some of that less profitable, kind of not in our wheelhouse stuff.
You know, and as someone who's done it, you know, hustle respects hustle. And, you know, the fact that, you know, I think a lot of people understand it's going to be hard that first year. I don't think people necessarily understand how hard it can be. And, you know, the fact that you're out there with a law degree driving for Lyft or Uber and to do 150 networking events. You know, I think back that first couple of years, like we did quite a few, but nothing like that. And like, what a commitment to basically being like, if we're going to do this, like we're going to put our nose to the grindstone and, you know, get it done. Like, you know, and did you find that that paid dividends, that going to all those networking events and just being kind of everywhere was effective?
Well, and it's funny you ask that, because I just had lunch with Josh before this. And we were kind of talking about that fact and how from a pure numbers perspective in terms of money brought in, we can look back and there's not a ton from most of those events. But what a lot of people, I think, don't realize, especially people who are a little bit more nervous about networking, who are nervous about diving in and going into a room of 100, 150 people and schmoozing and breaking into conversations and just kind of generally having to be a little bit more, outwardly social, is that it's really a learned skill like anything else. So the first time that we walked into a networking event and had to schmooze and had to kind of, you know, the whole song and dance, it wasn't nearly as good as what, we could do now where, you're just much more comfortable. You go to more of them. So that's what I would say the biggest value is. We were talking about that today where it's like, I don't regret any of that because it fine-tuned our ability to sell ourselves, how we speak, how we can kind of give an elevator pitch, how we can, read other people and how we can, just really generally be a better kind of networker, salesman, business developer.
It's interesting that you say that because I absolutely agree. My partner, Tim, he actually joined a BNI or Business Networking International in his first year. We did get a decent amount of business, from it, but more importantly was just really learning how to become comfortable in selling yourself. After you do that pitch, for the thousandth time of like what you do and like going into rooms and like not just only like talking to people, but, being comfortable by being like, oh, hey, I could help that person if you're hearing a story or something like that and kind of interjecting yourself and being comfortable asking for business, learning how to refer other people business, how to get referrals, how to, thank people for those referrals, how to develop a referral pipeline more so than the dollars, and eventually it got to a point where, like you said, like it wasn't worth the amount of time. And so we had to kind of step back for that. But he and I both decided that, any associate that we ever hire, the very first thing we're going to do is be like, go join a BNI for a year. And whether they bring in business or not, like you're going to become a really good marketer. You're going to learn, how to feel comfortable networking with people and how to be comfortable building those relationships. Because while there is some of it in law school, like it's not the main focus.
Right.
And sometimes I think that that is a mistake that law schools make. And something that I've tried to push them to do a little bit better is this is a really, really important skill and grades are important and, academic writing are important, but like you really need to be teaching these kids how to market and how to network, because regardless of what practice area they go into, that's a really important part of just being successful in life.
Absolutely. And I think it even goes beyond just strictly the marketing piece. One of the things that I think is so important in the practice of law is being able to communicate with your clients and not only provide value, but, convey to your client the value that you're providing. And, I love CU Law. I got a great education, but I do think that that is one thing that I hope going forward that there can be some focus on that because, I think a lot of lawyers lack a lot of, emotional intelligence and ability to connect with people. And ultimately, a client's not going to know whether your memo is an A+ memo or an A- memo. The client just wants to get it done accurately and well. They want to know that they can trust you, that they can rely on you. So, in CU's favor, Josh is going to be probably doing a lesson to some of the recent grads. He already did it. He did a webinar with some recent grads just about, hey, the job market's pretty tight right now. How can you kind of sharpen your more kind of social skills and things like that and kind of put yourself out there and have better opportunities? So I think that, it is kind of growing on the law schools.
What is your favorite thing or aspect of owning your own law firm?
Yeah, so I love the people aspect of it. I like the legal work, but I don't love, I'm not one of those guys who just loves, sinking into a 40-page purchase agreement and cranking, you know, 7 hours straight or something like that. You know, I like meeting the people, assessing the problem, figuring out how I can help them, and really knowing that they have someone in their corner. So ultimately, you know, I like helping people. That's what I like. I like meeting passionate entrepreneurs who have an idea, who, you know, are good at what they're good at and want me to come in and be good at what I'm at and protect them and their business. So, you know, I'd say a close second is certainly the flexibility in terms of when you work and how you work. But I'm also, you know, I tend to stray towards probably working too much just because I like to, you know, push myself towards, you know, ultimate goals. But, you know, it's great either way. You know, if I'm going to work, at least it's at my, you know, out of my own choice.
Right. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's sometimes easier to stay motivated when it's your name on the door.
Right.
You know, like, this is my baby, my entity. This is what I created. And so every day I go into work, it's to further that goal. I guess let me ask you the flip side question. What is the most difficult or hardest part about owning your own firm?
Yeah, I think the hardest part would be just embracing this uncertainty. You really got to get comfortable almost just like picturing yourself walking to the edge of a cliff and wrapping your toes over the edge and just kind of taking a deep breath and not, you know, stressing the uncertainty, because that is one thing for, you know, people who are used to living a life where it's, hey, I'm going to get paid this amount every 2 weeks as long as I, you know, do my job well. You know, it's a big difference when it's like, hey, look, you know, I'm pretty certain that work will keep coming in, but unless it's already in my trust account, you know, I never know. So it's always the balance of, hey, you know, I don't want to get too much work to where I can't do it and provide 5-star service, or where I'm too stressed, or I'm kind of losing the benefit of being a firm owner. But I need to make sure I'm getting enough work in so that I know I'm getting paid, because, you know, I think that that's probably the hardest part, is just embracing that uncertainty, especially during the first couple of years when, you know, there will be times when you do get pretty close to, maybe not in year two, but definitely that year one, we had times where it was like, yeah, I'm eating, you know, canned beans mixed with ramen noodles for the rest of the week because, you know, it's just, you got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. That's absolutely the case. So especially in these times, with the coronavirus and the plunging economy, there are, very likely listeners that are either law students or, young lawyers who are thinking about taking the plunge and launching their own firm. If there was one, and there, obviously there's a million things that you could advise people on, but if there was one thing that you could impart upon those law students or young lawyers thinking about doing it, what piece of advice would you give them?
I would say the number one piece of advice is that you can do it and you just cannot quit. Perseverance is the number one factor, in my opinion, in success and entrepreneurship. You can't go into this thinking that it's going to be 6 months and you're going to be rich. You can't go into it thinking it's going to be probably even a year. You've got to go into it. And I always, this is what I tell people. I say, you got to go in and you got to make a commitment that you're going to put your all into it for at least 18 months. If after 18 months, you haven't found any traction, or you really hate it, or whatever that may be, you know, then you can reassess, you know, what you want to do. Or if you, you know, some other job pops up in the meantime and, you know, you would rather do that, certainly do your thing. But what I would say for the people who are really kind of, you know, like you and I, who are kind of, you know, are presented with this situation and aren't so much thinking of starting a firm just for something to do, but really have, this has been an opportunity where they've, you know, kind of found this idea where, hey, maybe this is actually who I truly am and what I want to pursue. You know, it's going to be a slog for a while, but if you always remember what you're working towards and you're unwilling to quit, you'll succeed for sure. I tell people that it's, you know, the practice of law, if you're willing to just go out and hustle and get it. There's a lot of people who need legal work right now who don't have attorneys. And so, I mean, it just kind of depends on how much you're willing to put into it. So I would say, long story short, you can do it. You just have to be willing, never willing to quit.
You know, and that reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, which is that people tend to overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 year and underestimate what they can accomplish in three. And I think it's either three or five, but the point still remains that, you know, that first year is going to be a slog, as you put it. Like, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be really hard. But and it's not, you're not going to go from, you know, zero to, you know, living super comfortably and everything is easy in 1 year. But if you can make it through that hard part, that you can really kind of be amazed at, hey, now I'm 3 or 4 years out, and you can kind of look back and be like, wow, like, I really have accomplished something. Like, I am doing it. I'd like to turn a little bit about to your actual practice area and just talk a little bit about more what that looks like. So you're the first transactional lawyer that we've had on the show. We've had some legal field related. We had Todd Rogers, the dean of assistant dean at CU.
How's he doing, man?
He was doing good, man. We had a great conversation. And then COVID happened, so his episode is now a little bit dated on what the legal market looks like.
Oh, yeah.
But he was great. And we've had a lot of litigators, and we had just had a judge and stuff on. But as our first transactional lawyer, what does like a typical day look like for you? Obviously you're not in the courtroom, but what are you kind of doing in a typical week or a typical day?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just tell you exactly, because I'm a very routine oriented person. So I wake up at 5:30, I hit the gym, I lift for an hour, I come home, I stretch, I meditate, I have a whole morning routine. So I think that that's, and I only want to include that because I think that that's such a vital piece to my success and my ability to have perseverance through, you know, kind of the road bumps, is that I really focus on my mental health, staying happy, staying satisfied, making sure I have purpose and enjoyment in what I do. So I have this routine, you know, I stretch and then I meditate. Then I get into the office probably about 9:30 typically. Typically these days I'll have a legal task that I want to knock out as soon as I get into the office. So I find that when I'm coming off the workout, off the meditation, I'm ready to absolutely lock in and crush a project. So usually spend those first couple hours before lunch, usually from about 9:30, 10 until about noon, 12:30, accomplishing one task. And then usually from about noon, 12:30 until 1, I'll look at my emails, clean up as much of them as I can. Usually I'm able to sort through most of the stuff that actually needs kind of, you know, responding at that time. And then go to lunch about 1, come back, usually then go through all my emails, kind of do more of some business development for a couple of hours. So then probably about 4:35, I'll lock back in, do 2-3 more hours of legal work. Cause that's when, you know how it goes. I mean, we have an assistant as well who screens kind of most of our incoming calls. But if you have a client that, you know, needs to ask a question and things like that, I mean, you gotta be there for people. So, you know, and you want to be, but it does certainly break that focus train. So as much as possible, I try to do my focus blocks, you know, one right in the morning and then one that's kind of after hours, just because typically people aren't expecting a quick response at that time. So that's usually what it looks like. And take into account that this is during COVID. So to kind of just, you know, to expand on that a little bit. Pre-COVID, when there was a lot of more ability to, you know, go out and meet people and things like that, my day looked slightly different. Still kind of the morning routine, but then what I would do is basically, you know, same morning block, but then really focus on, you know, after lunch, really kind of focusing on getting communications, because then typically about, 4:35, 5:30, I'd be at a happy hour or a networking event or something like that. Circle back a little bit, wasn't so much communications. It was more so focused on strictly legal work because I was able to do more business development in person. Whereas now we're, you know, because of it, you know, you have to survive and adapt. So we're trying to expand on our digital presence. We're trying to kind of find other avenues to where we can drive business in.
And that's I think a great point. In the time of COVID, obviously a lot of in-person networking events have ceased to exist. What type of networking or business development are you guys doing now in the kind of small business transactional space?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, speaking kind of from our perspective directly, what I did is I actually reached back out to everybody that I've done business with over the last 18 months. During March, when everything was you know, pretty dead. You just had more time to do stuff. So I guess I'll circle all the way back. So when everything shut down, we made a commitment to, you know, Monday night, we're each going to write one blog. Tuesday night, we're going to, you know, each put together a social media post. Wednesday night, we would have off. And then Thursday night, we would read like a book for self-improvement. And so those were some of the things we started doing initially and just reaching out to people as well. And then also really focusing on our digital presence. So that was something that we probably started doing at the end of last year, even pre-COVID. But we started sending, you know, we started having more of a focus on, especially when people call and you give them free legal advice, you know, just answer a real quick question that to you isn't really a big deal, but to them, it helped them out a lot. You know, we'd say, hey, you know, you don't have to do this, but if you do, you know, want to, you know, help us out in some way, we're always happy to, you know, love 5-star Google reviews, Yelp reviews, and things like that. Because a lot of those times, those people who call in for free do want to, you know, offer you something. Mm-hmm. So we started just as much as possible when people would ask those types of things or kind of say, oh, is there anything else I could do? We always say, you know, hey, if you don't mind leaving a Google review, we'd love that. So started really kind of making a push on that front, really got our website locked in, got some guys doing a lot of SEO optimization, that's search engine optimization, to where, you know, we're higher up in Google searches. We show up Google Maps and things like that. And so that was kind of our initial push. That's once COVID started, we started doing the blog, started doing things like that. Then, as kind of COVID continued and things started to open back up a little bit, what I actually did was reach out to pretty much everybody that I did business with over the last 18 months. And I've been doing, you know, doing lunches with them, doing kind of just getting back in touch where it's like, hey, let's just sit down, let's catch up. I want to hear how you've been. So been doing a lot of that,
You know, you said one thing that I just want to highlight because it's advice that I give to a lot of young lawyers, and it was something that worked really well for us, which is be willing to help the people with the one-off questions that other lawyers aren't willing to help, especially in those first couple of years, because there are people that have legal questions that are either kind of weird, maybe they're a little bit crazy, maybe they're difficult, and it's readily apparent that there is no financial benefit in taking the time to answer that question.
Right, right.
And so many of these people have called 3, 4, 5, 6 law firms, and they're either told, you know, oh, you got to pay this giant retainer before I'll even talk to you, or they're told, sorry, we can't help you, or, you know, every law firm's favorite excuse for turning down a client, we're just too busy. And so when they finally get to a person who is willing to talk to them, willing to hear them out and try to answer the question, and maybe sometimes it even takes an hour or two of like research to give them a call back, and you know that you're not getting paid for that help. But what you gain is another person that is out there in the world who believes that you're a great lawyer and who is willing to sing your praises. And you have no idea if that person who had this crazy question that no one would help them with, you know, happens to know somebody that owns a business who needs a lawyer, or right, in my, you know, my situation, or happens to know someone that got into a car accident or got charged with a crime. And so many, and it's not something that you see right away. It's not like you help them and then the next day you get business. But if you can help those people and leave them with a positive image of you and your law firm, and then set up the processes where you at least are in contact with them every now and then, whether that's a newsletter or just kind of an update, that eventually will pay dividends, because you will get more and more and more people. And that is such a great way to get referrals. So that's something that I just heard you say, and I just really wanted to highlight that for young lawyers and law students that are listening, is, you know, especially if you're opening your own firm and you got a little extra time on your hands, like, take those difficult calls, be patient, do the work, don't expect instant results, because planting those seeds are going to get you, you know, great fruit down the line.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I would just kind of second that. I mean, it's one of those things where it's hard, you know, you can't track it, but it's kind of that just general reputational critical mass, where the more good legal work you do for people, the more you help people, the more your kind of reputation grows in the Denver community. You know, eventually you just start getting work. And it's not because so-and-so always told so-and-so. It's just you don't kind of know where it comes from always. Somebody's just like, oh, I just, you know, I heard your name.
Or, friend of a friend.
Right, right.
that's my favorite referral source. Yeah, somebody, John something over there, so told somebody that they knew you and, you know, they worked with your fiance and I don't know. It's always interesting trying to track them. I do want to shift gears here to cover our final topic. So I know that you have been active in the Colorado Bar Association small and solo firm section, or SSF for short. Tell us a little bit about that section and what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I initially got involved in the solo small firm section. Mm-hmm. I initially got involved there because when we first started our firm, we tried to kind of go to as many CBA, everything type of events. And we actually went to the solo small firm holiday party. Great holiday party, really a lot of fun. And what we really noticed right away was it seems to me, and most lawyers are this way in terms of knowing that, hey, there was somebody who took a coffee with them and mentored them. But we found it especially true in the solo small firm section, where it was all people who had started their own firm or were part of this smaller firm. They were really, really willing to help and to listen and to kind of offer you guidance and things like that. So that's how we initially got involved in it. What it is basically just a kind of subsection of this Colorado Bar Association for firms, I believe, solo to, I believe, five attorneys is the threshold for small firms in this case. And so through kind of just showing up to more events and meeting different people, and actually meeting Sue Bertram, who used to be, I think, the like CBA liaison for the solo small firm, she asked if I would be the YLD liaison for the solo small firm executive council. And so I did that for 2 years, and it was great. Got to meet a lot of great people. So I think it's really good. I think it really offers a great place for people to kind of start networking as well, because it's, you know, I found that it's a little bit easier to network with other attorneys at times because you're kind of talking the same language to some extent. At the same time, it can be a little bit harder because some attorneys aren't super socially adept, but whatever, you know, you make do. I would say that, you know, so many people just willing to offer mentorship and with great kind of advice. And did that answer the question?
Yeah. And actually you said my magic word. So one of my other big themes besides where you end up is not necessarily a straight line that we've managed to touch on in every podcast episode is mentorship. And I know from my experience that it would have been literally impossible for me to be successful as a lawyer without the probably 12 plus mentors or lawyers that I consider mentors that I found. And some of them were just a couple years ahead of me and could offer me kind of more advice about kind of what they just went through. And some of them were, you know, had been in the profession 40 years, and some of them were in my practice area and some of them were outside my practice area. But it was absolutely essential to this day that I have, you know, all of these mentors that I can call and ask questions to, whether it's about running a firm, whether it's about a legal issue, whether it's about an ethical issue, whether it's about a networking or business development issue. And that literally was one of, if not the single most important thing that I did when I was starting my firm. And so it sounds like in the solo and small firm section that you found those mentors and people that you could kind of talk to and reach out to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and it was a combination for me. I mean, LawBank was another great place that I found a lot of great mentors. I also just have kind of reached out to a lot of people who do, kind of the work we do. A lot of people do the work we do, but there actually isn't that many kind of small and medium sized firms focused in the business transaction kind of startup space. There's, you know, a few people who just really, really kind of, you know, helped us out at the beginning. And, we'll always be grateful for that.
And I think you kind of talked a little bit about it when you were talking about that camaraderie. You felt at that holiday party is this inner feeling to kind of pay it forward. Right? That, you know, there were so many people that sat down during that first year when I knew absolutely nothing and taught me and helped me and graciously gave their time that there is this feeling of like, I absolutely want to help the next person. You know, and I know, right. I met with you guys when you guys were starting out,
yeah.
And you know, and you're now one
of the first people we met with,
and now you're meeting with people. Actually, you know, we were just talking about it before we started. I sent you a person who's just starting out, and now you're the person giving that advice to someone that was, you know, where you were, you know, 3-4 years ago, and it, you know, so has that been your experience as well? That there's just kind of this desire to kind of pass on that knowledge?
Absolutely. I mean, there's been very few people or very few attorneys who aren't willing to at least give you one, you know, one phone call, or, you know, most will give you at least one coffee. And I think it's just that general sense of law is such a, you know, a practice that, it's such a thing that you have to learn, you know, from doing and having the guidance of someone kind of who's been through it. And as you know, there's a lot of questions that you're going to have that aren't like, oh, well, you know, what's the law surrounding X topic? It's like, hey, you know, how do I send this type of email? You know, if I'm asking for this, like, how would I tone this? I mean, is this going too far? I mean, there's kind of small things, or like, hey, you know, a client, you know, told me this, how would I handle that? You know, I'm blanking on specific examples, but sure. there's just certain things where, you know, beyond the actual in the weeds legal stuff that another lawyer who's been through it can kind of coach you on. Yeah. Hey, you know, if you're having, you know, if you're doing a consultation on this type of matter, you know, make sure you're kind of aware of these factors that may be kind of discussed as well.
Right. Well, thank you, Nick, so much for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Today. I'd like to end each podcast, and I know that, you know, you're willing. If there are young lawyers or law students out there who want to get in touch with you, whether it's to talk about opening their own firm, small business law, just the general practice of law, or, you know, finding good powder snow days, whatever it is, are you willing for, you know, people to reach out to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what's your email address so that people can contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit long. I picked it after my CU email address, which it made a lot of sense. It is my name, Nicholas, NICHOLAS.Troxel, TROXEL, at TroxelFitchLaw.com. TROXELFITCHLAW.com. If you just Google Troxel Fitch, you'll find our website, and then you'll know how to spell everything.
Awesome. Well, there you go, guys. If you need any, if you're looking for a mentor or looking for somebody to who's done this before, who you want to reach out to, definitely reach out to Nick. He is a great guy. Thanks again, Nick, for coming on, and I'll see you around.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kevin. Get legal with it.